I have my favorite congressman on the air with me right now. Congressman Jeff Duncan, how you doing this morning?
Well, I love Ann. I'm glad to be on the I Love Ann show. Thanks for having me on. I wish I could do it in the studio. We're actually traveling to the northern part of my district today, so I'm in the car. But thanks for having me on, Ann. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, we miss you. We miss you. And I know this has been really tough. This whole year has been really tough on everybody. And let's see. You're going to be, though. You're going to be here in Greenwood tonight.
I will be at the Greenwood County Republican meeting and speaking. That's at 6 o'clock. So I look forward to that. I wish we could have done this, but based on the time of your show and the time I'm going to be down there, it just didn't work out to be in the studio.
Right.
And I would have had to wear a mask and all that other stuff. And, you know, you like to see my pretty face, not mask up. So.
Oh, yeah. I want to be able to see that smiling face. Yes. Well, well, anyways, Jeff, first off, what was your opinion of the debate last night?
You know, I think a couple of takeaways. She had a very condescending smirk, which rubbed a lot of people wrong from what I'm hearing. It was very clear that, you know, she voted against a big trade deal that benefited South Carolina in the 3rd District, and that was the USMCA. And she voted against it because she wanted to continue pushing those progressive environmental policies like the Green New Deal. You know, they try to run away from the Green New Deal, but it's on the website, and it's obvious that she supported it. Look at her voting pattern. So that was one. I think Mike Pence should have been a little more aggressive. I think he should have really touted the administration's record on the economy and rebuilding our national defense and pushed back against the continued lies on their part about what the president said or didn't say. He could have been a little more aggressive, but I know Mike personally. He's just a really, you know, fine man, and he's not going to be that overly aggressive.
Yeah, I thought it was real interesting that he'd use his time for the new question with the answering the old question, that he didn't let her slide on this. He didn't just move forward. I thought that was
I think that was a good debate tactic to use your time to clarify something or whatever. I think a couple of questions were just not answered by both parties. You know, he never answered the question about an orderly transition of power.
Right.
And you know, they basically should have looked at the camera and said, look, it's going to be an orderly transition of power. That's how we do it in America. If the president and I lose this election, I don't think we are going to, but if we do, there will be an inauguration day on the 20th of January, and there will be an orderly transition, and then move on to talk about other things. She didn't answer the question about stacking the Supreme Court. You know, FDR tried it in the 1930s, and it didn't work then. Even the Democrats pushed back. 9 is the number. She couldn't answer that question and refused to answer it. Really, he called her out on that. Biden has refused to answer it as well. So I thought both candidates up there didn't answer a question at one time or the other. And it was because they needed to try to clarify or get another shot in otherwise.
Absolutely. And then, of course, the bombshell this morning, Jeff, about President Trump saying he's not going to the town hall if it's going to be virtual. He's not going. What do you think?
Well, I mean, we're in a new normal. I don't know. I can't speak for the president. I think I just did a Zoom toast and topics with Anderson Chamber, probably about 30 people on the call on the Zoom. You know, we're doing more virtual stuff. I think the president's fear is that, you know, Vice President Biden needs to be in person and doesn't need to have a teleprompter to answer the questions for him. America needs to see his lack of facilities right now. And I think it's obvious that, you know, he's slipping, whether, you know, there's a disease like Alzheimer's, which I'm very, very familiar with, or whether it's something else. They need to see whether, you know, their presidential candidate is healthy or not. And so I'm not going to go any further on that. I will say that, you know, too many memes and too many stories out last night and this morning has been about a fly on Vice President Pence's hair. You know, black flies matter, I guess.
Yeah, that fly now has his own Twitter account, I understand. That's true.
It You know, you know you lose the debate when your talking points afterwards is about a fly on somebody's hair. You know, we forget about that fly on Hillary Clinton back during one of her debates years ago. But anyway, let's move on.
Yeah, let's move on. Anyways, now I understand that the relief package for the American people is off the table. Is that right?
Well, as of right now, I mean, they're about $1 trillion apart. Speaker Pelosi and the Democrats want to plus up spending for a lot of liberal programs. I think the president and Secretary Mnuchin and Majority Leader McConnell want to expand the PPP program that actually helped Main Street America, get some stimulus funds out there for moms and dads and households that are suffering, kind of work on unemployment insurance benefits. That's really where we ought to focus our efforts and our money right now, instead of plussing up other government spending programs that are unrelated to COVID-19. But it's just a difference in political philosophy. At the end of the day, we're $25 trillion in debt, and nobody seems to want to talk about how much $1 trillion is. A trillion is a million billions.
You can't even imagine that.
You know, yeah, it's a number that, you know, if you got $100 billion, that's $100 billion. To get to a trillion, you have to have 1 million billion. And that's just a heck of a lot of money. And we keep adding trillions and trillions to our nation's debt. And I'm not saying that it's not warranted right now because of COVID-19 and everything. I voted for the CARES Act. I never thought I'd go to Washington and vote for trillions of dollars of spending. But the government had culpability in shutting down the nation's economy and brought a lot of the pain to Main Street America. And we needed to provide some pain relief. We did with the Triple P and with the CARES Act funding and unemployment expansion and whatnot. But at the end of the day, we have got to come back around and figure out how we're going to pay for all this.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. It scares me every time they talk about it. But, you know, that brings me to a very good question, I think. I don't understand how Biden can be ahead in the polls on the how he would handle COVID when he hasn't even had any experience with doing this, or he wasn't even there. I find it hard to believe that the American public still gives Biden higher kudos for how he would handle COVID than what the president.
Well, it's because of the mainstream media spinning the narrative that President Trump handled it wrong. You know, here's a real estate mogul and an entrepreneur and businessman that we hired to be president of the United States because of his business prowess to turn the economy around. He's not an epidemiologist or a virologist. He was listening to Fauci and Birx and Redfield and many other scientists and doctors in that field about this novel coronavirus. It was novel because nobody knew. It was brand new. It was new on the scene. Nobody knew how it would react, where it would go, how far it would spread, what we should do, what we shouldn't do. You look at all the information the president was given. Masks work, masks don't work. Vaccines can be created. No, we can't get a vaccine. He was given a lot of information, but yet any president would have been given the same information from those same experts and would have come to the same conclusion over and over. It's like a battlefield commander. You know, the situation changes, especially right. When it's a novel coronavirus that we were learning so much about. So, you know, I'm amazed that narrative has been able to stick. They've been able to spin it. And Biden, if he had been president, would have handled it the same way. I do give kudos to the president for having the wherewithal to shut down travel from China, not just Wuhan, but China in general, when we realized that's where the virus originated and that's where it was spreading from. This is the second largest economy in the world. This is one of our largest trading partners in China. Yeah, we're competitors, but we get a lot of goods and services from China, and he shut it down. He shut down all travel because he tried to stop the virus from coming into the country. At that time, there were only 5 patients in the United States of America. Of course, we know what happened as the virus was spread, but he tried early on because he recognized where it was coming from and tried to stop it.
Yeah, I just this whole thing with the media, it makes it very difficult for people to get real answers.
Yeah, if you look at polls, though, Ann, you know, Hillary Clinton was leading Trump at this point by double digits, and everybody, you know, the same situation. These pollsters are going to be out of work after November the 3rd because we're going to realize once again that the polling data is wrong. I don't know how they get back to where we can trust polling data anymore. I don't trust it now. I didn't trust it after the election, but because they had it so wrong. And so I'm not trusting it at this point. I'm not trusting it on the Lindsey Graham race. I'm not trusting it on the national race. And I have traveled a lot. I've been in Colorado, Utah, Oregon, Montana, Louisiana, Texas, North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, Missouri. And I don't see what the pollsters are coming out with. What I see is, mostly middle America and other places that are more inclined to vote for Trump. I believe the silent majority is huge. It's larger this time than it was in 2016 because of the cancel culture. And folks look, my mom's not even putting a Trump sign in her yard right now because she's afraid. And her son is a United States congressman. She'll put my sign up. She'll put Trump's sign up probably right before the election, but she hadn't put a Trump sign up now because of that cancel culture and the fear that's out there. And I believe that is affecting so many Americans and their inability or their unwillingness to answer poll questions or be identified in any way right now.
Now, what about the senior vote? Because they're saying that he's losing the seniors. Can you speak to our seniors that are listening this morning? You know, I know there's been conversation about he shouldn't have taken the trip around when he was at Walter Reed and this type of thing. Can you talk to that for our seniors?
Look, we know the senior population is one of the most vulnerable populations, and President Trump has said that from the get-go. But we see too many governors like Cuomo and in Washington State mess up when it comes to nursing home facilities and extended care facilities and retirement homes. But if I was a senior, I'd look at this thing and say, this president has strengthened our United States military. Many of the seniors served in our military. He is pro-military and pro-veteran. He has tried to secure our country by securing our southern border to stop rogue elements from coming in this country. We see too many times that illegal aliens are involved in crime, and many of those crimes are violent crimes. This president has turned around the economy, so those seniors that have children and grandchildren, their children and grandchildren have jobs to go into. They don't have to come back to their childhood home and live in the basement or in their childhood bedroom. They have jobs to go to, good-paying jobs, so that they can focus on their lives. Seniors are worried about their retirement income. If they have investment money in 401ks or IRAs or whatever, because of Trump's policies on the economy, they have seen those funds rebound and grow back after the post 2008 financial crisis that decimated so many of those funds. A robust economy that the president has helped create has helped those seniors have more money in their retirement funds. And too many times lies are told about Social Security, and the president wanted to cut this, that, and another. He doesn't. Nobody wants to cut Social Security benefits for recipients today. We do want to try to shore up Medicare and Social Security for the seniors' grandchildren so that something will be there available for them when we're $25 trillion in debt. That is a very uncertain future for those type of benefits for the children and grandchildren of the seniors that are listening today. So nobody wants to take your benefits away, but we do want to try to make sure something's available for your children and grandchildren. And so this president has tried to secure America, has tried to rebound with the economy. I think he's addressed COVID to try to keep us all protected. We know who the vulnerable populations are, and hopefully the vaccines that are created will be given to those most vulnerable populations first and foremost.
Absolutely. Well, I just think it's a shame that this is the type of spinning of the media that they get to the point where they don't know what to believe, and I think that is bad. So I'm glad you were able to clarify that this morning. Now, moving forward, what have you been working on, Jeff Duncan, up there in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, well, after the Atlantic Coast Pipeline was shut down by Duke Energy, and because they were going to be challenged in court after court after court, and litigation costs were going to be so much to make it unfeasible, we've got to figure out how we're going to address the energy needs of South Carolina's economy 10, 20 years down the road. And with the V.C. Sumner nuclear reactor offline, which was supposed to be that electrical generation that we were going to use in 10 and 15, 20 years to meet those 24/7, 365 baseload power demands that our state was going to see as companies come into South Carolina. They relocate from other parts of the country because we've got a great quality of life here in South Carolina. We've got a right-to-work state. We've just got pro-business environment. We were going to see and are going to see more businesses, more manufacturing move into the state. They're going to need the electrical power supply. How are we going to meet those needs? we're not going to have Atlantic Coast Pipeline bringing natural gas to the Carolinas now from the Marcellus Shale field. So we're going to have to figure out how we're going to meet those needs. And so one thing I've been working on is try to expedite the permitting process for nuclear power. That's for the emerging technologies of small modular reactors or next generation reactors, whether they're thorium molten salt reactors or just other generation traditional fusion reactors, fission reactors that we have. So try to expedite that. It shouldn't take 10 years and tens of billions of dollars to permit a reactor that's the same design as one that's been operating for 10 years. So we need to lower those costs to expedite the regulations on that so that we can meet the electrical needs going forward, hopefully build more nuclear power in this country. But there is a byproduct, so I've been working on Yucca Mountain issues, trying to open that back up so this nuclear waste that's sitting on the Broad River, the Savannah River, or the shores of Lake Kiawea or the Catawba River can be taken somewhere and stored until we can figure out how to reprocess it or reuse it or it just decays over a period of time. So those are some things I've been working on the Energy and Commerce Committee, focusing on just reining in spending and balanced budget, trying to get the White House and his administration and my colleagues in Congress to realize we're $25 trillion in debt. We've got to figure out how we're going to pay for this and how we can get our spending addiction under control, something I've worked on for a long time.
How's that working for you, Jeff?
You know, there are too many people up here that they derive their power from spending money, and the money comes from the taxpayers, and they can agree, but then they don't act on it. We're going to keep pounding that drum, you know. Hopefully we'll get some movement on that. One other thing I've been working on is called the Justice Act, and there are these childlike sex dolls that are created in China, and they're imported into the country, and these are sex dolls that look like children. They are, you know, sometimes, 7, 8, 9 looking dolls, and with AI they can have the voice of the child. They have actually pulled social media pictures of real children in Florida and created a sex doll and that image of that child, and now they can pull a voice off TikTok and make that sex doll in that child's voice say anything they want to. We ought to stop the importation of those things that are fueling and feeding the pedophilia around the country, and it's just a simple thing we can do is ban the import of those, and it's something that I've been working on. Unfortunately, I can't get many Democrat co-sponsors. We were able to pick up a couple in the last couple of weeks, but for whatever reason, the Democrats won't sign on to this bill and won't help me move it. And it's a no-brainer if you really think about it.
That's kind of like that movie. Cuties on Netflix.
Yeah,
the young girls.
Absolutely, Cuties ought to be banned. And we seem to be continuing to fuel the pedophiles in this country and the laws that were changed in California. It's really a sad state that we're in. This is one thing we can do is pass the Justice Act and ban the importation of childlike sex dolls.
Well, these are some of the things. Now, I think you're up for re-election, Jeff Duncan.
I am, and I want to ask all of the listeners, I hope I've earned your vote. I'm asking for your vote on November the 3rd for it will be my sixth term, and we're in a position now on Energy and Commerce Committee. I'm the first member of the South Carolina delegation that has been able to procure a seat on Energy and Commerce, one of the strongest committees that deal with 75% of the U.S. economy. I'm the first one since Carol Campbell to get a permanent seat on that committee. And because it is so influential, I now have the ability to work on the issues that are important to the state, whether it's healthcare issues or whether it's telecom issues or whether it's the energy and environmental issues that I talked about earlier. I'm in a position now to work on those and be effective. So I'm just asking humbly for your vote. I don't think I've changed much. I've been pretty consistent. Not only in what I talked about on the campaign trail, the jobs, energy, and the founding fathers issues, and that's an acronym that spells Jeff, by the way. I think Jeff's a winning message. But those issues I've been very, very consistent on. I've voted very consistently. I'm very conservative. And these are issues that I think are important to the voters in the 3rd District. We're going to keep working on those. So I'd humbly ask for your vote and hopefully win re-election for another term on November the 3rd.
Well, a lot of voting's going on now. What? Just real quick, what did you think about the flip-flop with taking it all the way to the Supreme Court on whether you have to sign an absentee ballot? I was blown away that they flip-flopped on this as many times as they did. Now you have to have a signature on the back of the envelope for your absentee vote, which I think is a good thing. But that was wild, wasn't it?
Yeah, I you know, the continual push to allow ballot harvesting and mail-in voters voting, and not people that, you know, are truly in need to mail-in vote that are incapacitated in some way or scared in some way. But, you know, we've seen too many times where mail-in ballots have been thrown in the dumpster or found in a ditch or in the back of a car. Too much fraud and other things have gone on around this country. Talking about the signatures, there was a race in Utah for a congressional seat where the election commission did not verify the signature. They had the signature on the rolls, but if that was a Democrat vote, they didn't verify the signature to see if it matched up. If it was a Republican vote, they actually looked and see if that signature matched up with the one on the file. There's just too much of that that goes on that influences the election one way or the other. And too many times we see most of those go to the Democrats. If they find ballots in a closet or in the trunk of the car, those are Democrat votes. It's rare that you ever see those votes flip a race to a Republican seat. That's indicative of where I think we are as a nation. We need to make sure that we get this right, man, because we are the world's first and greatest republic. And we have free and fair elections. We are the standard. And we ought to get it right so that the rest of the world can see us and try to emulate us. But when we have integrity questions about our elections, then that doesn't just necessarily impact the U.S. It impacts other free and fair elections around the globe. And we need to get this right.
Absolutely. Well, in closing, I don't know whether you heard this from Diamond and Silk. I'll give them the credit because it was their slogan. They say, vote red. Remove every Democrat.
You know, I didn't see that. I love it. I might use that later.
I thought you might
today,
like it.
I'll let them use my Black Lives Matter slogan, and I can use their red slogan. That'll work great.
Remove every Democrat. That's what their thing is.
Remove
vote
every
red. Congressman Jeff Duncan, it's always a pleasure. Look forward to seeing you. I'm going to be there tonight, so I'm looking forward to seeing you tonight at the GOP meeting out there at the Greenwood Farmers Market.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to it as well. We'll social distance, and we'll talk about a lot of things we talked about again today. And, Ann, I love you. I appreciate you getting me on. I love your show, and my prayers for you and your family and this great nation that we live in. May God continue to bless us all. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Congressman Jeff Duncan, have a great day. See you tonight. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.